offers, the role of college has changed a lot over the decades. The GI Bill opened the door to higher education for many World War II veterans, and some states moved toward tuition-free higher education. Those trends changed over the years, with less state support for colleges and higher tuitions. That put college out of reach for a lot of Americans and left many others wondering whether the cost and the debt were worth it. And our next guest says, changes in higher education have created one of the major dividing lines in American politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How important was the idea of going to college to you when you were growing up or maybe raising kids? Did it seem like college was just off the table no matter what? Do you think access to college is an important part of your political views, your world views? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Will Bunch is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. His latest book is called After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. Will, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Before we dig into some of the history here, I want to start with some pretty recent history, a big divide, a widening divide in who people vote for based on their college career, how much education they've gotten. Can you talk about that and how it sets you on this path of researching this?
Absolutely. And you're right, Rob. It did start me on the path because as a journalist who, you know, mainly covered politics, I was trying to figure out some things I was seeing. You know, why were voters in places like the Paper Valley in Wisconsin who were seeing their jobs, you know, outsourced to China or Mexico? You know, why weren't they mad at the CEOs who were doing the outsourcing? Because I would listen to these shows like Rush Limbaugh, and the anger I was hearing wasn't directed at business, you know, or these capitalist decisions that were being made. It was being directed at people in the media. It was being directed at college professors and Hollywood movie stars. And I wanted to try and explain that. And while I was doing this research, you know, every election cycle, college attainment, whether or not you have a college degree, clearly was becoming the fault line in American politics, to the point where in each election, more and more, the Democrats are the party of the college-educated people with diplomas, and Republicans increasingly are the party of the working class people who didn't go to college, and frankly, people who have a lot of resentment towards people they see as elites looking down on them. So, you know, absolutely, you know, political scientists more and more are finding that it's not economics, it's not class, it's even though those things are related, but when you really drill down, it's educational attainment is the biggest determinant these days of who you're going to vote for.
I want to touch on some of the history here to look at a couple different visions of what higher education could be and how that's changed. I want to start in the aftermath of World War II and the GI Bill, which sent a lot of mostly male, mostly white veterans from a lot of different social classes to college, maybe people who never would have thought of college. Can you talk about that vision of education and a road that could have led to?
Yeah, you know, the history of college in the last 75 years is fascinating, and it's really been this constant debate over two questions, which is who is college for and who should pay for it? And in the story really starts in the 1940s, because before then, only about 5% of the American public obtained college degrees. In fact, the majority of people didn't graduate high school and going into World War II. But you had this kind of fluke almost where Congress was looking for ways to reward returning veterans and also to keep them occupied, basically. And they offered this college benefit, and people took it in numbers that just weren't anticipated. You know, a couple million people within 2 or 3 years of the program enrolled in college, to the point where some colleges had to build Quonset huts to house the overflow of people. You know, enrollment doubled at a lot of schools. And what it really established was the middle class could really benefit from higher education. And maybe we should make higher education a public good the way that K through 12 education has always been in this country. And, you know, so you had this era not, you know, in addition to the GI Bill, just low tuition generally at public universities, which were expanding rapidly in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And that era eventually came crashing down, partly because of politics. There was a conservative element in this country that really didn't like what was happening at some of these college campuses because people were taking their liberal education and protesting the Vietnam War. They were protesting racial segregation. And this backlash was kind of led by Ronald Reagan, who said that college shouldn't be for people's intellectual curiosity. It should be for getting a job. And one of the aspects of that backlash was tuition started to rise. You know, state governments started to support higher education less and less over the years with taxpayer dollars.
So that leads to, as you mentioned, higher tuitions, less access for some people to college. And you use Wisconsin as a big example in the Scott Walker years, fast forwarding a little more, to a sort of politics of resentment against college. What do you see happening here?
Well, a couple things. One, Scott Walker is just a fascinating case study, you know, because he's a guy who, you know, had a picture of Ronald Reagan over his desk in his college dorm room, right, when he attended Marquette. He's really the political offspring of Ronald Reagan. And understand, you know, Reagan wasn't against the dream of people going to college, which, you know, really did become the American dream after World War II. You know, I mean, Reagan thought that people should pay for it, that people should study, they shouldn't be protesting. The generation of Republican leaders that's kind of epitomized by Scott Walker took things to a next level. You know, they began to see college is the enemy, you know, that liberal professors were protesting their conservative politics. They didn't like what students were being taught. And so, you know, under somebody like a Scott Walker, you saw more extreme cuts in state support for the public university system. You saw an assault on tenure, you know, particularly targeting again, professors who were deemed liberal and seen as critics. And I think Scott Walker's attitude was summed up in this amazing incident that happened in 2015, where it came out that his administration was working to actually change the mission statement of the University of Wisconsin. Wisconsin had this bold mission statement that, you know, the university's main core value is the pursuit of the truth. And Scott Walker wanted to take that language out, and he wanted to replace it with language that was very boilerplate about how the university is for workforce development, period. And he ended up not doing that. I mean, there was a backlash, you know, many people still believe in the idea that college education is something that's supposed to make you a better person, a critical thinker. But I think that whole episode defines this notion that a lot of conservatives don't like the idea of higher education as a way to develop critical thinking or as a way to use kind of a general education to study the humanities or social sciences and develop a kind of more tolerant and more diverse worldview. A lot of conservatives feel threatened by that, frankly.
We're talking to Will Bunch. His new book is After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does college fit into your American dream? Were you able to go to college if you wanted to, or was it financially impossible for you to do that even if you wanted to? Do you think that more people should go to college? Do we need other alternatives for post-high school? What should that look like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Will Bunch. His new book is After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your reactions to what our guest has to say at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go to our callers, Will, let's talk about the modern day now. It seems like the system, as you describe it, is broken for two groups of people, those who can't get into college, maybe for financial reasons, they don't have access to it, and people who can get into college and are worried, is it worth it? Is it worth the debt that's piling up? What, describe the brokenness as you see it of our current system.
Yeah, well, our young people are told that they can't get ahead in this country and in our current economy without a college degree. And certainly a college degree, you know, I mean, it can add $1 million to your income over the course of a lifetime. So obviously it's a worthwhile pursuit. The problem is the front end, getting a college degree has become so expensive, and, you know, programs like Pell Grants and financial aid just don't come close to making up the gap between what college costs and what families are expected to pay. And so millions of families have gone into debt to finance college, or they're, you know, intimidated away from the college track. There was a fascinating survey after the 2016 election that found one of the biggest determinants of voting for Donald Trump was people who felt that college was a risky gamble for their family, that they had a sense of economic fatalism, that they weren't going to succeed in society without a college education, but yet college education just wasn't going to happen for them. And that, you know, you mentioned in an earlier question about the resentment. I think that's where a lot of the resentment comes in. So you have a situation that makes people on almost most people on all sides kind of angry, right? The people who have this debt, who, you know, can't buy a house in their late 20s, don't even feel they can get married because they have this debt hanging over their head. But, you know, they're mad about that. You know, the people who've been locked out of this system that's called a meritocracy, but yet they're told because they didn't succeed in it, they must somehow lack merit, that they must have less worth because they don't have a college degree, which isn't true. But, you know, people feel that they get that vibe from the educated and they're angry about it. So, you know, it really explains a lot of our divide right now.
Go to our callers at 800-642-1234. By the way, if you were just trying to call in, we had a little phone glitch. Try again. 800-642-1234. Rick is with us now in Monona. Rick, hi.
Hi. I heard you mention the GI Bill when I first tuned in. And I must say that one of the great government programs ever invented. I was a poor kid. I served in the Navy, and when I got out, it provided me a chance to go to college, and that experience has changed my life. It's been such a wonderful thing to have, and I couldn't have done it without the monthly stipend that the GI Bill provided. It was life-saving and kept me going, so... first of all, that's my endorsement of that. The second thing I wanted to mention, or ask your guest, and that is, how did college become so expensive? When I went to school, and this would have been in 1970 to about 75, it was like $50 a credit. Now it's, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, and that's for state institutions. What happened to that money that the government used to supplement it?
Gotcha, Rick. Thanks a lot for sharing your experience with the military benefits for campus there. And to his question, Will, whole book's been written about this. How did college get so darn expensive?
It's a long story. You know, it's happened. It's really been building up since the late 1970s is when tuition started to rise every year. You know, higher than inflation and even higher than things like the cost of healthcare. That's how much college, the cost of college tuition has risen over those years. a couple things happened. Harvard kind of set the pace on this. They were worried about the shrinking enrollments after the baby boom and during the down economy of the 1970s. They decided, you know, because they were Harvard, that there were certain people from the upper classes that would pay anything for their kids to attend, and maybe they could use some of the extra money to channel aid back to some middle class families. So they called this the high tuition, high aid model. So they kept when they raised tuition the first year and they still got the same number of applicants,
They went ahead and kept raising tuition every year, and they still kept getting applicants. And the problem was, is most schools don't have huge endowments like Harvard does, and they just can't provide the levels of financial aid for middle-class students that some of these Ivy League schools do. And that's when the gap between what college cost and what people could afford and what they were getting in things like Pell Grants really started to take off. And, you know, colleges generally found that they've been able to market themselves to parents and their kids on prestige more than price. You know, colleges have spent a lot of money on these perks like lazy rivers and rock walls and having gourmet food courts in some cases, because they're competing for students, and they find that they do better competing on prestige. And even if they have to recruit wealthy out-of-state kids or wealthy kids from China or India to fill up the student body, this has become the model, and the people who are suffering are the American middle-class kids who can't afford this system.
Thanks for that call, Rick. We're talking to Will Bunch about his new book, After the Ivory Tower Falls. We'll go now to Patrick in Wausau. Patrick, hi.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm curious to get Will's perspective on this. You know, in the hospitality industry, it seems like communities try to get heads in beds. And in the education community, it just seems like the different education institutions are competing to get butts in seats. What I don't understand is, why is it that we can't provide high school juniors and seniors with some kind of counseling to let those kids know, to let the kids who, you know, who counselors or some assessment would really feel that the kids would thrive in a technical college setting, to encourage them to go there. And kids who would thrive going to a 2 or 4 year community campus, you know, suggest they go there.
Patrick, thanks for the call. I'll expand that even a bit. Will, you say the answer here isn't just about the people who do end up going to college. It's the people who might go to a technical college, as Patrick talks about. But also, we should be thinking about people on career paths that don't involve college. What would you want to see in those last years of high school, or maybe the year after high school?
Yeah, you know, I think Patrick really, really hit the nail on the head with his question about, I mean, I argue in the book that people are making bad decisions, and people in their families really are making bad decisions at age 18. You know, they're feeling a lot of pressure either to get into the right school or to make a decision about going to college or whether or not going to college, and being told that what they decide when they're 18 is going to determine the rest of their life. Quickly, I'll say, I mean, the book argues, you know, that we shouldn't just reduce the cost of public universities, that we should be able to offer, you know, free or low cost trade schools and other options for people who aren't inclined to sit in a traditional, you know, university classroom for 4 years. But the other thing I really get behind is, and it kind of ties into what he said about the guidance counseling, I think we should have a universal gap year for 18-year-olds, where instead of racing off to college or starting their career, that we have a massive, you know, civilian service, you know, civilian national service, where people, you know, get signed up for projects like conservation. You know, I mean, President Biden has proposed something along these lines, the Civilian Climate Corps, for example. But I would expand it to more areas, you know, working in schools and working in underserved communities, you know, and give people a year to, first of all, you know, work with kids from other communities. You know, we're so siloed right now into the red states and the blue states and, you know, cities versus rural, and bring people from different backgrounds together and try and find ways that Americans can have common purpose, because everybody agrees that's one of the biggest problems in the country right now is division. I'm not saying an 18-year-old gap year would totally solve the problem, but it's an idea that would help get us thinking about the problem quite a bit and make a lot of progress. So yeah, there's a lot we can do to change the system.
In our last just over a minute or so, Will, do you see people taking this problem seriously, tackling it head on, trying to make significant changes that'll help bridge these gaps, both in access to education and mutual resentment for the people who go to college and those who don't?
Well, the good news is we're starting to have some conversations around this, right? I mean, President Biden's right now is supposedly making a big decision on what to do about the $1.75 trillion in college debt that's really hanging over a couple generations of young people. And I think dealing with that debt crisis is a start, but there needs to be a grand bargain. Like I said, you know, if you just tackle debt and don't do anything else, then the freshmen entering college this month are going to start accumulating new debt. You know, we need to come up with a bigger idea of, you know, using our resources as the richest country on earth to figure out a way to make higher education a public good, the way that K-12 education is accepted as a public good in this country.
We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. It was great. I appreciate it.
That's Will Bunch, national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He was with us today to talk about his new book. It's called After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics and How to Fix It. Still time for you to share your thoughts on this, your experiences, maybe. Email ideas@WPR.org.